So, hello again and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel. We've been told that we need to say something up top informing listeners that this is a new episode. So this is me telling you, it is. Quick Question is an advice podcast by two best friends, one a father, homeowner, comedian, and writer for TV's American Dad, and the other an Emmy award-winning writer for Last Week Tonight with John Oliver on HBO, who, other than that, doesn't really seem to have his life together too much. Each week, we get into questions small and medium, and this week will be no different. I am one half of that podcast. My name is Daniel O'Brien. Hello. And I'm joined, as always, by Soren Bowie. Soren, do you want to introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Soren Bowie, creator of American Dad and Last Week Tonight.
Wow!
Yeah. It's, I don't brag about it generally, but I realized we were bragging there, so I thought I'd bring it up.
I heard someone giggling while you talked. Who's that? Who's that
squeaky
little mouse?
Oh, Jesus, there's someone else in this room.
Hey, guys. I haven't created anything that's on television, so that's it for me.
You didn't even introduce yourself.
Oh, yeah, sorry. It's classic Bacon. Didn't introduce himself.
How are you...
Soren, stop smiling.
How do you find new ways to do this wrong?
Just like, you think there's only one direction you can go
right. That's
away from right, but no, it turns out there's a lot of different directions that are wrong.
I follow my instincts. And they're a rainbow of wrong, apparently.
A broken compass is useful as long as it points the wrong direction, Bacon.
Anyway, as always, we are Soren and Daniel. Quick Question. And as even more always, you, our listeners, are, as you prefer to be called, Quick Queries Howlin' Commandos.
What?
I was worried
about
that. Hold
on. Oh, wait.
One,
okay.
Too.
All right. Nick Fury's.
Yeah.
Okay. Howling.
Yeah, that's right.
Howling Commandos?
Yeah.
Okay, can I float one to you?
No.
The query community.
What is that?
It's the queer community.
Oh, man, no.
This one started early.
Off the rails right away?
Vincent, get your
By the way, we know this is unsustainable, right? Like... I'll either run out of names or get bored, and I started this podcast very bored.
Are we cumin or are we answer?
Ooh, I like that. It's a shame that you came up with it, because that means it's never going to happen.
Why wouldn't you say quancer?
Answer. Are we answer? It's better than quancer.
Do I not understand this bit?
I guess not.
At any rate, we like to call out one review every week to read on air. And as usual, I printed out a bunch of random reviews, strapped those reviews to some mice that I found, and I fed those mice a responsible amount of cocaine and had the mice race. And I'm going to watch the race, and I will read the review of whatever mouse comes in first.
Can I get a sense of what the course looks like? Is it a maze or is it just like a football field type of...
It's a straight line, but there are no borders, so they're kind of going all over the place.
Okay.
Okay, we got one.
Wow. You know, that happened faster than I thought it would for mice and cocaine.
Well, mice are notoriously fast. It's a 5-star review.
Get the fuck out of town.
From user... B_R_A_K Brack.
I feel like that name was created in response to our Instagram.
Yes. I mean, who could say, because no one's ever been to our Instagram. But Brack writes, hilarious podcast with sexy voice Soren, Magic Bacon, and Dan. These guys are a trip to listen to as long as you can get through whatever baloney Dan is coughing up at the time. Awesome rants, great advice. Dan should make more OPCD.
Wow. This is like scathing for you.
Yeah.
It's almost like the very last portion of it was almost a compliment, but I think he might just mean he's better at that.
Right. I mean, so
to begin with, sexy voice. Yeah. Soren, no disrespect. You're a very sexy man, but I don't know sexy voice.
Really?
For you.
Okay, maybe I'll work on it.
Do your sexiest voice right now.
Hey, Dan. Coming at you live from Los Angeles here. Things are pretty nice over here. It's nice and warm, temperate. It's a nice fall day. How's
okay,
that?
Okay, that's pretty good. That's
oh,
pretty
thanks. Good. But that's not me.
And then we've got Magic Bacon, which I don't know what that's a play on, to be honest.
Magic
Johnson, because Bacon's a Lakers fan.
And last time someone said I was very into cherry varietals.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which that was a reference to nothing.
I do like that they're creating your mythos.
I don't understand what's happening.
That the audience has decided on who you are before you have. That's a great one. Yeah. You know, other than the dance stuff, obviously that's a big bummer for you. But I mean,
yeah, it's fine. And to Brack, I will not make more OPCD. Get over it. Get a fucking life, you dork. Anyway, this is a show where we ask each other questions. And
that was a tenth of our fan base.
Well.
Okay, sorry. Like, can I ask you? Are you just waiting for me to fucking ask you about the Emmys?
No, ask me any question that you want to ask.
Dan, quick question.
Mm-hmm.
Did you win like a Streamy recently? Something like that?
Well, Streamies. Oh God, Soren, you sound so ignorant. The Streamies happen in Vegas and they don't happen until like the spring.
Oh, fool. Gosh. That's egg on my face, obviously.
Yeah.
Let's see. You won, I think what's considered the most prestigious award any television show can possibly win.
Sure.
You don't think so? Wait, hold. Do you think that there's one that's more prestigious?
I don't think there's one that's more, but it seems very silly to, like, it doesn't feel prestigious. It's the TV award that exists, you know?
Okay. There's nothing else out there? I guess not.
No.
Well, then that's, I mean, then it is. It's both the most prestigious and least. It's the Alpha and Omega. And for a second there, I thought maybe you were belittling your accomplishment. Like, no, it's just an award. But that can't be true. You haven't done that once since I've talked to you since you've won.
It is kind of, it's like a silly thing. It's not silly. Like, I'm very excited to have won it and it was a cool thing to do, but it didn't change anything the day before and the day after the Emmys were the same days. I still felt like we're in a category against Saturday Night Live and Colbert and Documentary Now and Sam B and Daily Show and Corden, and I know a lot of people who are in all of those shows and I respect all of them and they're all very funny, so it's very strange to walk away from that category with an award when I feel like, oh, this is going to sound cheesy and dorky, but like the more meaningful reward was being in the same category as these people, honestly. Like, Brian Stack is the head writer for Colbert, and he's someone whom I've looked up to for all of my comedy writing life. And we were in the same category, and that's wacky.
Okay. Yeah, but you won. I want to hear about the details of the win. Can I just hear, like, first of all, just lay out for me what your tux is like.
My tux is like a very simple tux from fucking Nordstrom. I went there.
A very simple Maserati.
Sorry?
A very simple Maserati.
Yes. Fuck you. I went there. It was like, I want a tux and I don't want to call too much attention to myself. And we got a tux and I got this was a nice humbling moment where the guy who was fitting me for my tux, I was like, I'm not sure I want a bow tie. And he was like, yeah, for your face, I wouldn't want a bow tie.
What an asshole.
You need a long tie because your face is so... He very kindly described it as cherubic, which which means round.
Yeah, in like a an illegal way.
Yes.
And so did your tux shirt have frills on it, or was it just a straight shirt?
It was a straight shirt, and I did the one where you don't have buttons showing.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. Okay, yeah. And then what was the, like, did you have a signature to it? What made it yours?
Nothing. What I wanted to do was, I wanted to find, if I was going to stunt anywhere, it was going to be in the shoes. I wanted matte shoes with a dash of white to them. I wanted it, like, white on the soles, but I couldn't find exactly what I wanted. So I just got, like, plain black shoes. And since I couldn't find anything that I wanted for the shoes, I just decided that if I'm going to throw any flair in there, it's going to be in the socks. So I just had, like, bright rainbow shocking socks.
Oh, that's nice.
And that's it. That's the only thing that I had that was not, like, gun to your head, classic black and white tux.
I like the idea of white soles on your shoes. That's, like, a classy move. That means you're untouchable. You float wherever you go. Your feet don't touch the ground.
I couldn't find them anywhere. Those shoes don't exist.
Okay. Well, okay. I'm really curious. So they call Last Week Tonight, and you get to stand up. You get to kiss your date, who, correct me if I'm wrong, you brought your mom, right?
Yeah, I hugged my mom and we walked out there. It was, I had mentally prepared to lose because that's how I go through life, is assuming that I'm going to lose everything. And on the off chance that we'd win, like the phrase that I had prepared to hear if we'd won was, and the Emmy goes to Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. Those were the words that I was fixated on.
You're waiting for that L.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Lin-Manuel Miranda, who was the presenter who gave us this award, said, and the Emmy goes to the team behind Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. So as soon as I heard
the team,
I was like, that's not what I was expecting. We lost. That's it. And then when he got to the rest of the sentence, was very surprising to me.
And how many people are there? Filled? The stadium is a stadium. Is the place just filled with like 500 people?
5,000 people.
Wow. And so you just get up and you can turn around and you can see all those people clapping for you?
We do, yeah. And we can hear because we know that because the writers are nominated, we're in the orchestra, we're close to the front, but we know that the rest of our staff is also here and they're up in the balconies because life is unfair. And I know where they are, and I can, like, hear the sound coming from them. Like, I know the loudest claps are coming from my coworkers who are up in the balcony, and I just want to share it with them.
Okay, so you get up, you hug your mom, you stand up, mm-hmm. and you turn around, you flip off those losers up in the nosebleeds.
Yep, that's right.
And then you just get to walk up the steps onto a big reflective stage.
Yeah, we walk up on this stage and there's 5,000 people there, and I don't think I've ever been in front of 5,000 people in my life. And
more than that, because it's live, it's televised. You're millions of people are watching you in that moment.
Yeah, I guess. Are you trying to make me retroactively more nervous?
No, I'm expressing my excitement for you.
But no, it was very cool. And Sina, who is my office mate, and one of the best writers I've ever met, he gave our speech, and he thanked the rest of the staff and our office dog, Bruce. And I barely remember any of that, because I'm just, like, sitting there on the stage trying to be like, be present right now. Hey, you're not present. Do it harder. And before you know it, you're ushered off stage to go back. They, like, take you out of the building to go to another building where you actually get the physical Emmy and you have to sign it out. And then you wait for a while to go through a series of press rooms where they take your picture and they ask John questions while you stand in the background. And I remember thinking, about how hungry I was, because this is like, here's the thing. It's nice to wear tuxedos and be around famous people, and it's nice to be in a nice theater and to win awards, but like, you're there from 2:30 in the afternoon until 8, and they don't feed you. Here's the thing about the Emmys. They don't fucking feed you. You're just sitting there being sweaty and hungry this whole time. And then we move to this other backstage room while we're getting Emmys and waiting to go back into the theater. And there's apparently like a separate party in the backstage room where there's like a cart full of tater tots that we are not allowed to have. What? I don't know who the tater tots are for, but we're just standing there desperately hungry while ushers wheel tater tots around for someone who is not us.
You can do anything you want now. This is just should be your free pass through any building you want, is that gold statue in your hand to do anything you like.
Yeah, but I couldn't, but the tater tots were on the other side of a rope.
Oh, well, then your hands are tied, obviously.
Yeah.
And so how much of the show are you missing at this point?
We missed a bunch. We missed probably 40 minutes of the show.
So the show just thins out as it goes on. Okay. This is so exciting.
Yeah.
And
it's also a thing that I was surprised by with the Emmys, is that when the commercials happen, there's nothing for us to do. Like, it's not like an entertainer doesn't come out.
Yeah, keep the crowd warm.
To like excite the crowd during the commercials. And there's not even anything on the screen that will distract or entertain us. We just sit there. It's just a commercial, and we all just sit there and wait for the commercial to come back. And when we're a minute and a half back from the end of the commercial, a loudspeaker voice comes out and is like, "Take your seats. Everyone go back to your seats. Hey, sit down. Do it. We're about to come back. And when we come back, we want everyone clapping."
Oh, shit. So you actually, this is like being in the crowd for a taping, a live taping.
Yeah, yeah. It's where not
you have,
fun.
You have a job to do. You have to be loud and enthusiastic.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awful.
I also felt
I'm
bad
so
for
sorry
every,
this experience happened to you.
Every
Dan.
Presenter, every performer, because like, this is not a good crowd. This is not a crowd that is excited to laugh and have fun. Everyone's nervous. Everyone is waiting for their category. And you've got Anthony Anderson and Ken Jeong who are trying to make jokes in front of the worst audience I've ever seen.
Yeah. That's pretty standard fare for award shows, I think. It's like the worst. It's a nightmare job for a comedian. But, I got to remember now that if I ever win any type of award where I'm allowed to give a speech, I got to thank an animal of some sort. Thanking a dog is such a good move because it immediately puts everyone on your side.
Yeah.
And no one does it.
No, it was really great. And like, Cena is, again, one of the best people in the world. And he knew that we have 25 seconds to give a speech. And he knew that, like, no one gives a shit about who wins the writer award for late night variety talk show. So he just wants to take up as little time as possible. And I think he did an amazing job with the amount of time that he had, as far as like honoring the people who are in our category, honoring the people who are in or on our staff, and then ending it with a joke on our dog, which was great.
That's awesome. And then afterwards, do you get to go to some really fun after parties, or are they as awkward as I anticipate them being?
They're super awkward. Like, we went to the Governor's Ball is the party for, I think it's anyone who was nominated, but also any rich muckety muck who can buy their way into this party.
Okay.
So it was a fun party with a lot of famous people around there, but it was also crowded and overwhelming and strange. And then we also had like the HBO party, which is all the HBO folks, and the Last Week Tonight staff party, which was the most fun because that was like, oh good, these are coworkers, these are people that I've worked with all year, I'd like to party with them and dance with them. That's nice.
That's great.
But there's a nice thing about, so I don't know if you, when was the last time you've been to like Disneyland or Disney World?
Well, I just got back from Legoland.
Okay.
So oh, you mean different. Specifically. Okay. Okay. Disneyland, I went last year.
Okay, so I found...
We go for our anniversary every year. It's a big thing for us. We really love Disney.
Is that true? I don't think that's true.
No, it's a terrible lie. Those people really creep me out who are adults and very into Disney.
But so I remember my my friend Elise went, I went with her to Disney, the one in Florida, which is in Florida. World?
Yes.
Yeah. Went to Disney World with her and my friend Susan years ago. They ran like the Disney Princess half marathon, and then they got tiaras. And a thing about Disney is if you walk around with a tiara, the staff has to say, "Hello, princess." They have to call you princess. Good morning, princess. Good afternoon, princess, et cetera, et cetera. And I remember at the time thinking, this is stupid. As I'm walking around with my friends who have their tiaras and people are calling them princesses, I think this is a very silly, dumb thing. But as I walked around at these parties, the governor's ball and these other parties, holding an Emmy, everyone who sees me holding an Emmy says, congratulations. I think, oh, I get it now. This feels very nice. I really just wanted to walk around with an Emmy for the rest of my life because strangers come up to you and they say congratulations, and it feels very good. It feels like being called princess, I imagine.
So the award show's in Los Angeles, and the Emmy is about 2 feet tall and unwieldy. How did you get it back? Did you carry it through the airport with you?
I had to put it in. They give us a box to put it in to carry with you. I checked my carry-on bag so I could have the Emmy with me at all times on the flight home because I was afraid to check the Emmy because it's like a big ass box. It's a big thing. Yeah. And when I went through, two things about leaving. When I left the hotel, I had the Emmy in a big box and George R.R. Martin saw it and came up to me and was like, I know what's in there. Congratulations. And I was like, thanks, George.
Whoa.
It was wild. And the other thing is that when I got through TSA, the TSA agents were like, can we take it out and hold it? And I get like, I don't know. Yes, of course. I feel like it's, I personally wouldn't ask to hold anyone else's Emmy because I feel like I want to earn it. But like once I got one, I just feel like, yeah, I want anyone in the world to hold it. Anyone take a picture with it. I don't care. Just do it. Yeah. It feels cool.
No, I know. I totally get that impulse. I want to hold and touch an Emmy.
Yeah.
Just see what the magic of it is.
Yeah.
Find
out if it fills the hole. It doesn't.
You're still the same person.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so great. And was your mom proud?
She was very proud. Yeah.
Did she cry?
Yeah.
That's great.
I mean, there's some like deeply personal, emotional stuff that we won't get into, but she was very happy. Yeah.
It's very common for people to say, everything that a human does is for sex. Like, the things you learn when you're young, you learn how to play guitar because you want to be with girls. You learn how to be cool. You want to do sports. Like, the end goal is always sex. And I disagree with that on one front, which is that a lot of what I do is I want to make my parents proud. And so when you actually see those moments where they're really, really proud of you, it's like, yes, I could die in this moment.
Yeah, I was very excited that I got to do this for my mom, she got to fly out first class. It was the first time she flew first class in her whole life, and stay at a nice hotel and get nice champagne and go to a big fancy thing. She got her hair and makeup all done, and we got to see a bunch of famous people. I was like, oh my God, it's Tony Shalhoub. And she said, he's tiny and old, but still.
I like that your mom is like, putting down anyone else who she thinks might be a threat to you. Like, are you kidding me? He sucks. Did you see him in Big Night? Not his best performance. That's so cool. And so you must, in the hotel, you're just seeing celebrities left and right, right?
We are, yeah. So we're staying in a fancy hotel in Beverly Hills with like most of the other HBO people. So we're just like in the hotel with Game of Thrones and... I didn't see any Barry people, but I saw some Succession people, which was huge for me because I love that show. Yeah. And again, Game of Thrones.
Did you see Cousin Greg?
Just like, sorry?
Did you see Cousin Greg?
I saw Cousin Greg. He's so tall.
Yes! Oh, I'm so happy you got to see Cousin Greg.
But I didn't talk to anyone. Should I have talked to anyone?
No, I don't know. Think so. I think you did the right thing.
I'm still... So one of the things that people have... Very nice people on the internet have said about me being on stage at the Emmys. They're like, oh, there's Daniel. He looks so awkward.
No, come on.
And I still kind of felt that way. I still felt like even on this stage and holding a trophy, which is like, well, I can't talk to famous people.
Oh, that's... Well, Daniel, we do this occasionally on the show, but please step over here into Soren's compliment corner for a moment.
I've seen the footage.
Sit down. The chair is very comfortable. It's a little lower than mine. It's just a thing I do. I saw the footage of you going on stage, and you look like you belong there. Like, it wasn't like when you see a friend of yours in a movie or something like that, and you're like, oh, it's weird. I can't disconnect from the person. You look like you're like, yeah, that's the type of guy who should be winning that award. Like, I liked seeing you up there and just being in your element. And so for people to be like, he looks so awkward. He doesn't belong up there. That's them projecting on you. That's them being like, no, he's me. Trust me, he's me. That's exactly it.
That's kind of you.
All right, you can step up. You can leave the corner if you want.
Yeah, thank you. Oh, God, it was so hot in that corner.
We're going back eventually, you know.
So like, sweaty.
I do this like once a show now, it turns out.
Yeah. Do you have any more questions about the Emmys or does Bacon? Can we move on from Emmys?
Did you guys do like something when you got back to the office? Did you do like a pizza party and kind of decompress from it?
No, we went straight back to work, honestly.
Yeah.
Because I got back midnight Tuesday and then went right back to work Wednesday morning because we had a show the following Sunday.
But Bruce is a changed dog, just different person all of a sudden.
Bruce is strutting around in a muscle t-shirt, like, check me out.
That's great, Dan. I'm really happy for you.
Thank you. It was fun. It was weird.
Yeah, but of course it's going to be weird. It doesn't matter. This is like a thing that no one can take from you. And as much as people like to say, like, awards don't matter, or it's not about the accolades, it's about the work. No, like, this is a big deal, and you deserve it.
Thank you. I don't care for this. hey, Soren, quick question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Is there something that you thought of in your youth as like an aspirational goal, like the peak of success, something that you really wanted to get that once you got it, you realized was not that great?
Why don't you answer first?
I'll answer. So growing up, I was super into the idea of one of those like Roomba robot vacuums that was in my mind for decades, was like, that's how you know you made it. If you got a robot vacuum that you can leave your house in the morning and be like, robot, take care of my mess while I'm away. And then it would do it. And because we didn't have one growing up, we had like a standard vacuum with a big fuck off bag attached to it. And it was plugged into the wall. And you would vacuum one part of the room, and then you'd have to unplug it and move it to another part of the room and plug it in there. And you just like do that dance around the house, just unplugging and plugging this big unwieldy vacuum everywhere. And I was aware of the idea of these cordless robot vacuums. And I just thought, if I get one of those, that means that I really made it. And I finally got one last year. I got... not a Roomba, because that's still very expensive, but like a knockoff version of a Roomba. I got that and was so excited about it that I was like, I'll never have to move a vacuum around with my hand again. I've got this thing that's going to do it. And it sucks.
It's bad.
It's not good.
I don't have a Roomba. Wait, why is it bad?
It's bad. It's so there's... I don't know how to describe things in houses, but like at the bottom of a doorway where there's like an elevated like ridge thing.
Yeah,
you know?
There's the door jam and the
door jam. Yeah, yeah.
The molding around the bottom.
The molding at the bottom. He can't really handle that elegantly, and he also can't handle anything that is like I have a lamp that has a rounded base, and he can't handle that. And whenever he comes up against anything that is unusual to him, he just fucking shits out whatever he absorbed previously. So I can set him up to clean while I'm gone, and then I get home, and there's just a bunch of dust and garbage in all of my door frames and at the base of my lamp.
Dan, I also got a room. I went through the exact same thing you went through 3 weeks ago. The full roller coaster, and I think it's because I don't have a pet and never had a pet, but I definitely like immediately, and I can't remember the word, but when you like place human emotions into an object, I like started thinking about the Roomba as a pet, and I would come home and he would be like upside down and like spinning one wheel, and it'd be like, Roomba,
no,
come on. And then like I also
get him to the VCA.
he ate one of my... you can't leave anything on the floor. They're useless inventions. He ate one of my earbud cords, and it got like into his organs, and I had to take the entire Roomba apart. It's not a good invention.
No, it sucks.
I noticed both of you gendered your Roombas male.
Yeah.
I'm curious if it's more or less sexist to think of it as a woman. Because generally when things are not they're not personified, my instinct is to make it male, and that's a problem. But in this particular case, I feel like maybe making it a female is way worse.
maybe. I was very surprised and unhappy about how angry I allowed myself to get when the knockoff Roomba did something wrong, because I treated it, I know it's not a human, but I treated it very subhumanly. Like I would yell at it and scream at it and in a way that like triggered a thing in my brain that was like, oh man, if I was in the past, I would have been one of those people who owned slaves and was bad with their slaves. Like as soon as I'm presented with a thing that society has decided is subhuman, I really go for it. And I was unhappy to learn that truth about myself.
That must have been so relieving for Jackson to see you be like, no, this thing's at the bottom of the food pole, or the bottom of the hierarchy, Jackson. The food pole.
Soren. Food pole. No, yeah, right at the bottom of the food pole.
Right at the bottom of the food pole. God, sometimes I hate myself.
Anyway, do you have an answer for that?
Something I do,
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
There is one. When I was young, I thought that we would go get ice cream sometimes, and the idea of getting a waffle cone seemed like something only millionaires did. I don't think I ate a waffle cone until I was probably a teenager and had my own money from a job. Like, it was so exorbitant to me that we would go there, and maybe it was instilled by my parents, but waffle cones were like the height of success for me. If you were really wealthy, you could have a waffle cone.
What about like Belgian waffle ice cream sandwiches?
Oh my God, forget about it. I mean, wouldn't even know where to get one of those. Only the elite get into those places.
Yeah, like Hassel's in Wildwood, New Jersey. Sure, the elite.
I know. I've never had one of those.
Oh, really? That was peak luxury for us, because we would go to our vacations growing up were to Wildwood, New Jersey, which is 2 hours south of where I lived in New Jersey.
To get great some to get away from it all
on vacations. Sorry.
Great to get away from it all.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Just leave it all behind and go 2 hours down the parkway to Wildwood, New Jersey. It was a beach town, and there was this place, Hassel's, that they made fresh Belgian waffles, and you would put ice cream in the middle of it and have a Belgian waffle ice cream sandwich. And we only got them once a year, and it it felt like the height of luxury because it was like, oh, this is like an annual thing that we have to.
My dad springs for this.
Yeah, you go to school, you got to earn this. You have to earn it by going to school all year. Yes. And then you get your one.
That was like, for me, the waffle cone was the next door. It's like you get into the VIP room and then you realize that there's even a bigger VIP room. Just going for ice cream was a big deal. You do that on very special occasions. And we go to somewhere, if you go to a Ben and Jerry's, that place smells delicious because they're cooking waffle cones the whole time. And you walk in and knowing that, like, yes, we're here to get this, but we're men of the earth. Like, we're salt people.
Yeah.
Salt of the earth people?
Right.
Not my day. But you know you're getting a sugar cone or you're getting a plain cone because that's just what you do. The waffle cones are like the next level. That's for the executives. That's exactly right. Yeah, waffle cones for me. And I would put in that category cake. I would go to the grocery store with my mom when I was a kid, and I hated the grocery store, but I was allowed to go over to the bakery section and just put my face on the glass and imagine what it would be like to taste any of those cakes. And cake might as well have been $1 million to me when I was young. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand, and it was something you only got on your birthday. I didn't realize that it's fucking $12 for a cake.
Right.
And I thought, as an adult, I'm gonna buy cake. I'm gonna have cake on my own. It won't even be a special occasion. I'll make it just for me. And that, I still haven't done that. I have no urge to do that in my adult life.
I did that in college, just because I was I've always liked cooking and trying to get better at cooking. I've never been good at baking. And then in college, I was like, one day, which is like, I'm going to try to bake. Even if it's as simple as like baking a cake from a series of instructions, I'm going to do that. And I baked a cake alone in my apartment, like my junior year of college, and frosted it and everything, like a full cake that I just made. And I was proud of myself. I was like, hey, I made a fucking cake. I took a picture of it and I sent it to my older brother. And I was like, look, I made a cake. And he was like, do you want to come over? Everything all right?
Look, I made a red flag. Yeah, that's a. It's, how was it? Was it tasty?
It was good. It was a competently made cake.
That's like a trope in movies. That's the woman who works in the bakery makes a cake for just herself because she's so lonely. And as an audience, we go, oh man,
she's really going bottom. Through something.
Yeah. Dan, quick question.
Uh huh.
Now that you're just writing and you're not doing this whole other arm of what you used to do at Cracked, which was performing, do you do anything to keep up your acting chops? Or do you have any way, like, it just, even if it's not intentional, that you just have to, you pitch in the room and have to do delivery and things like that?
I don't have to pitch in the room and do delivery, but sometimes we do. Like, our writer's room, when we're just doing gangs, which is the name that refers to when we have a series of setups and we have an entire day to do punchlines to a variety of setups. So it's often 14 to 20 punchlines to 9 to 12 setups. We will often sell them in the room. We're not selling them to anyone. It's not like we're going to win anything or a joke will get picked based on how well it's sold.
But you want to give it the best chance.
Sorry?
You want to give it its best chance, right?
Not really, because there's the people who pick the jokes aren't in the room when we write them.
Oh.
So when we read them out loud, I'm mostly just trying to make my coworkers laugh, really.
Okay. And even then, you're only doing it in one particular voice, right?
Yeah.
So is there any other outlet in your life for acting?
I'll do voices and impressions in my mirror in the bathroom. And I do a lot of voices and impressions when I'm walking my dog if there's no one around. There's like a performing itch inside of me. Not one that I want to scratch by actually performing in front of people, but I still like to do voices and do weird bits out loud. And I usually do that walking along alone with my dog in the park.
And you like you break down impressions in the mirror?
Yeah.
How long do you spend doing that?
Not a lot, just like 10 minutes in the morning.
Wow. No, that's a super long time.
Is that? Man, that's not even the real answer.
Wait, so when you were in LA, did you used to do that kind of shit in your car?
Yeah.
Okay, so I see.
That's the thing that I miss most about having a car is that there's not like a self-contained orb where I can try out accents and impressions and voices and
you work on your karaoke song in your car. I get it.
Yeah.
Wow, you're doing 10 minutes of impressions every morning, like a regiment.
Yeah. I was just doing it this morning because I saw there's Beetlejuice is on Broadway right now, and I saw it recently, and I'm floored by Alex Brightman, the guy who's playing Beetlejuice, because he's done such amazing things with his voice and his vocal cords that he's just decided that like the voice of Beetlejuice is I'll do a bastardized version of it where he's like, this is Beetlejuice and this is how he sounds, and he does it in a way that like is healthy to his vocal cords. Like I couldn't do that for 10 minutes, and he could do it 8 shows a week, and he bobs and weaves between that voice, that Beetlejuice, and also standard Broadway singing voice. Like he just, because the character demands that he does a bunch of
course
different things, and I'm so enamored by that skill right now that I just spent this morning with earbuds in, so my neighbors couldn't even hear like the backing track of what I was doing, but I was just like wandering around my apartment singing Beetlejuice songs to try to do what he is doing. But if you were just like walking around in the hallway, you wouldn't hear something that sounded good. You just hear one person going every once in a while, "Yeah, yeah."
That's
say my name.
I guess it shouldn't surprise me because that was always a thing that was you're quietly very good at. Correct. We would make jokes about it at after hours that you. Were
I'm
not
quietly
good
very
at
good at singing all alone by myself.
You're quietly very good at impressions. you'd use them as like they're throwaways, but you're very good at them. And you even do them of coworkers and stuff like that. And it would be like, oh, you'd hear it and it would sound like it was very off the cuff. But I'd be like, man, that's polished. That's a really good impression. So I guess that makes sense that that's like a thing you would do in front of the mirror. That's way more than I thought you were doing.
Really?
Yeah. So
But don't you do the same thing? Do I have that wrong about you?
No. No, I don't do so when I started it at American Dad, I knew that I would have to be pitching in the room. Basically, it's the same situation where you have a joke room that's separate, but then you're going to come into the big room, wherever the story room, and if you've got all these punchlines in a row, you're going to be reading them to the big room, and whichever ones get the biggest laughs, the writer will generally pick that and put that in the episode. And so you're selling it as the individual characters. You're kind of giving it the flavor of Steve or Roger or Francine. And so I spent a lot of time trying to get just enough that it didn't feel like there was a lot of effort to it, but that it was clear who the character was and it was selling it the best that I possibly could.
Oh, so do you like do a Roger when you're trying to sell a Roger joke?
Yes. And yeah.
And what does that sound like, Soren?
Like a fucking Al Capone, I guess. I don't know, Steve. That doesn't seem like a good idea. I don't know. Like
That's very good.
It's you're just giving it like a little bit of the element of it so that you don't want it to be like too, you don't want to be like dead on, but you also want to give it enough that people are like, yeah, I get it. I get the gist. I can hear
why
the
don't
character
you,
saying
why don't
that.
You want to be dead on?
Because then it's weird, I think. It was such a delicate balance when I first started that job. I didn't want to come in and be like doing it like a dead on Klaus. Because then people are like, what the fuck? Then it looks very polished and it looks very worked on. And that is not the ethos of this job. It's not like that's not what you should be spending your time on. Huh. And so I get a little bit of it. But I would say the majority of my performancing, performing. Fuck you, Soren. This is the worst. The majority of my performances are now for my child when I read books to him at night. Like, that's where I really keep it alive, where I can be, I'll try out different voices for different characters, especially when it's a book that I've read over and over again. I'll be like, yes, okay, here's an opportunity to try something new. And, you know, the narrator has a pretty standard voice, but then each individual character, I will just try something new with it. And occasionally my son will go, no, stop. And I know that that one's not working. That one doesn't play. And I'll move on to something else. And then when Colleen reads it to him, he really wants her to do those voices too. And especially if there's one that we've landed on, like, oh, that's, yeah, the mayor in this one is Morgan Freeman. And no, it's like, you know, it's fine, Dan. Don't cringe. It's fine. It's just my son. He doesn't know. And he'll want her to do it. And she can't do it. And then he gets mad at her. And then I feel like there's something that only his dad can provide.
Yeah, that's important. It's important to early on let a child know that to set the child against his two parents. That's important.
One parent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just her. Specifically. Yeah.
Right.
I'm glad you agree.
Yeah. Do you still practice? I feel like I remember you used to practice accents in the car.
Yeah, I used to. No, so the only ones I do now, occasionally I'll try an accent in a book. Like, there's one we have called Bear Snores On, and the way that they talk in it feels very British. So I'll try out a bunch of different British accents for all the different characters in that one. Like, one of them's very posh and very from London, and one of them is from Northern England. And I'll try out a bunch of, based on like kind of the animal, I'll assign it to. Like the gruffness of Manchester. I'll be like, oh yeah, that's the badger for sure.
Okay.
And so I've tried that. I tried doing some Russian and stuff like that for him. And that those were a lot of the ones where he was like, no, stop. Where it was clear that it was hurting the story. All right. Well, I'm going to read some outros, Dan.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds good.
But I got to find them first. While I try and find those outros. Oh. I just had something I just want to ask you. You had told me at one point that the best solution to global warming was thinning the population. Do you want to expand on that?
Yeah, I would love to. So here's the thing. And thinning has two different definitions. A lot of people, when I said we need to thin the herd to solve climate change, a lot of people were like, you want to get rid of people? You want to like eliminate huge swaths of people? No, of course not. I just want to make them thinner. I want the population to stay the same. I want us to maintain this rate of growth, but I just want everyone to be a little weight conscious so we can cut a slim profile, because I think the world is going to end when the world is going to end, and we might as well look good when we go out.
Anticipate that this would go to fat shaming. Oh, I love that you doubled down.
That is apparently how I feel.
Starting now. All right. On Twitter, you can follow Daniel at @DOB_Inc. You can follow me, Soren, at @Soren_LTD, or Michael Sroar at @MakeMeBaconPlease. You know how it's spelled. I'm not going to tell you again. You can follow Quick Question on Twitter at @QQ_Soren_Dan, or you can email us at QQ_with_Soren_and_Daniel@gmail.com. Riveting emails, I'm sure. And at some point, we're going to read them. We're going to read right through whatever people have sent.
What about Instagram?
I get a notification every time.
And but how many do you say we get a week?
No, I don't know. I don't pay attention to
ballpark.
Them. I don't know, six maybe.
Whoa, shit, that's six a lot. To seven. That's a ton.
Yeah, I mean,
okay.
I can't wait to read them all one day.
I'm gonna buckle down. I'm gonna.
If you're not paying attention to them, what the fuck? Who do you think is going to check?
We got one that was from Security Alert, but I don't know what that doesn't seem
what
serious.
Oh, so some of it's spam maybe. Okay, you can follow, find, or hire our producer, sound engineer, and editor, Vincent, at SiliconBeachPodcast.com. We also have a Patreon, which is patreon.com/quickquestion. Patreon.com/quickquestion. That's kind of it.
Bacon, do you have anything else?
No. Thanks, guys. Bye, Dan.